golden shore. What a day, glorious day that will be. What a day that will be when my Jesus I shall see. And I look upon his face, the one who saved me by his grace. When he takes me by the hand and leads me through the promised land. What a day, glorious day that will be. There'll be no sorrow there, no more burdens to bear, no more sickness, no pain, no more parting over there. And forever I will be with the one who died for me. What a day, glorious day that will be. What a day that will be when my Jesus I shall see. And I look upon his face, the one who takes me by his grace. When he takes me by the hand and leads me through the promised land. What a day, glorious day that will be.
Have a double duty tonight for some reason, but that's all right. Happy to be here. Had a good day. God's been good to me. Enjoyed the choir practice we had this evening. We got serious and practiced some songs and had a good time. Had fun. Had a good time. I think the Lord wants us to have a little fun every now and then, instead of going around with a long face or something. He don't like that. So, Christian with a good smile on their face. Happy to be here. Not going to take a lot of time. Let's just pray for Brother Greg tonight as he does the lesson. Pray for him real hard. Enjoyed the last one he had. And circumstances beyond our control. He had to skip a week, but anyway, let's just pray for Brother Greg tonight. Pray real hard for him. Lord, just bless him real good. I got one announcement I'm going to give out. Then that's all about that. At the Citizenville Middle School 21st Annual Veterans Day Celebration. This is for the veterans here that goes here to church. You can registration will be Wednesday, November the 9th. Registration 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. Program begins at 2 p.m. at the Sissonville Middle School Gymnasium. So if you're a veteran interested in that, talk to Brother John over there. And so I just wanted to give that out. Anyway, I don't think we could go no further. I think any service needs to start off with a prayer or whatever you feel like the Lord wants you to do. Like I say, let's pray for Brother Greg tonight. And the Lord, I don't know, I kind of feel like the Lord's in this place tonight. I feel kind of, old Shirley Hammock says, I feel a little bit religious tonight. So I'm glad of that. So right now, if you got a prayer request and the Lord knows all about it, I'm going to do things a little quick. I want to give Greg all the time I can, but I don't want to get in the Lord's way either. So if you got a prayer request, the Lord will know it. Just do it by an uplifted hand, and God will know all about it. You want to come to the altar and pray up here, that's fine. If you want to pray in your seat, ever how you want to do it. And Trenton, I want you to open us up in this prayer, if you would, buddy. Let's everybody pray. Thank you. you take it from here, however how the Lord leads you to do it, brother.
Okay, well, we'll go ahead and get started here, but before I start talking, I would like to make sure everybody is settled and don't have anything you need to say or testify about or do or anything. If you need to sing a song or testify or anything, please feel free to do that. And the same thing would go as we go through the night here, go through the time. If at any point you feel like you need to do something, Lord leads you to do something, especially if you need to come to the altar for anything, just come. Just come and certainly, we'll make sure that we take the time to minister and do those things. That'll be way more important than anything I'm going to say tonight and stuff. So just keep that in mind as we go through here tonight. As Dana said, anybody have anything? As Dana said, you know, we got started about 3 weeks ago, I guess. I'm losing track of time, which is not very hard for me to do anymore. And we talked then about other faiths a lot, and we sort of went over and talked about the differences between some of the other major religions, major faiths, and Christianity, and we had a good discussion that night. I really appreciated everybody participating, and the same thing should hold true tonight. If you all participate, this will be a lot better. This will be a lot better than me just standing up here. Sort of droning on like I tend to do. But I enjoyed that the other night. Whether you all got anything out of it or not, I enjoyed it. And so tonight, what we're going to be talking about, we're going to continue from that. You know, we talked about other faiths and other religions, and tonight we're going to sort of narrow our focus down. We're going to focus on some people would call it two things. We're going to talk about the Jewish faith or Judaism a little bit, and then we're going to carry that right in to our faith, Christianity, and how it started. So that sort of sounds like, if you attend a lot of different teachings, whether it be Sunday school classes or listen to things on the radio and whatever. Are we out of sheets? Everybody got one?
Everybody got
Alyssa got one, huh? Well, she's got it all memorized, so it doesn't matter anyway. But if when you talk about Judaism or the Jewish faith and you talk about Christianity, from a lot of people's perspective, you're talking about two different things. And we do it all the time ourselves, I think, and we do it probably not really stopping and thinking what we're saying. We say things, I heard it in my Sunday school class this morning, and I hear it all the time. So I'm not saying this to be critical or anything, but I hear people say this all the time. And they'll say things like, well, that occurred before Jesus. They were under the law then. Now we're under the gospel of grace. And as if those are exclusive to each other and things. But the thing I want you to really think about as we sort of go through this tonight is I want you to think, maybe step back and think a little bigger picture than that. That's, if you get anything out of this lesson tonight, I'd like you to step back and think a little bigger picture than that. In the sense of, don't think of it like this, is there was, and this is the way that we tend to think a lot because we read it in the Bible like this. We tend to think, well, there was Adam and Eve. And we read about the things that happened to them. And then we read about Abraham. And the Jewish faith starts. And then all of a sudden we're over here in the New Testament and it's now Jesus. As if God was sitting up there in heaven and he started off with Adam and Eve. And he got to a point and he said, that didn't work. Darn it. And he goes, all right, let's try this again. As they would say, let's retake this, restart things. And this guy, Abraham, he's a pretty good guy. Let's see if he'll follow me. So I'll just choose him and I'll make all these promises to him and hopefully he'll follow me. And then we get down to, we'll see the timeline here. Quite a bit later, and we go, darn, that didn't work either. These guys won't listen either. That law thing didn't work. It didn't work. I tried it. Didn't work. Nobody can follow it. So, here's what I'll do. I'll see, okay, my son. Let's see if my son could be a sacrifice. And we'll start a new plan. And then we get to Jesus' time in Christianity. And the thing about it is when we think of things in periods of time like that was pre-Abraham, this was during the law, now we're over here in grace, and we think God's perspective on us was different in each one of those things, we're sort of doing something with God that I think we probably shouldn't do. We're not doing it intentionally, but we are doing it. We're not understanding that there's nothing that has occurred since he created earth to this day, when you're sitting right here tonight, there's nothing that's occurred that's ever been a surprise to God. Nothing has occurred that was a shock to him. He didn't go, oh my, I didn't anticipate that. That's never happened with God. Everything that has occurred has been something that he knew or had to occur, or he knew it would occur, and he was ahead of it. It's part of his plan. There is no surprise here. Even this crazy election we're in right now is not a surprise to God. He's not shocked, and he's not surprised, and he's not caught off guard. And so the point of all that is, instead of looking at time and history as if the world has been going through time for centuries and centuries now, and God's down here paralleling it and just sort of reacting to what the world does at certain times, think about it like this. Time is going forward in the earth, and God is right on top of it from beginning to end. And nothing that has occurred, including Adam and Eve's sin, all the way to us sitting here breathing today, nothing has occurred that is outside of God's plan. And therefore, history, as we study it, all these things that have occurred in time didn't occur and God reacted to them. They have occurred because God planned it that way. He knows what's happening. He knew what would happen when he gave the law. He knew what would happen when he put the fruit in the garden. He knew all that. And everything that has occurred and is occurring is part of God's plan. That doesn't mean, as we talked this morning, that we're not accountable for our actions. Because God will, as he's made it very clear in the scriptures, he will hold us accountable. But he's still over all and everything that's occurring. So history is really a story of God redeeming us. When you folks that are, there's a few of you here, they're still in school or in college, and you're studying history, and some history teacher's telling you about history like it's marching on over here, and God's some little blip just sort of straggling along with it. Now, I'm not telling you to go get in a big argument with your college professors or anything, but what I'm telling you is I believe they're looking at it wrong. History is marching on at God's drumbeat. And everything that has occurred and will occur is because of him. He knows what's going on. And he's the one in charge. So if you think of time and everything that's occurred, here's the bottom line is the story of what we typically call Judaism that we read about in the Bible is not something separate from Christianity. It is the story of Christianity. Because Christianity in its true form is God's plan for us here on earth to be redeemed. That's what this is all about. It's about God offering redemption. That's what all of history is about. God doesn't need to learn. God didn't learn about the atomic bomb in the 1940s. We figured some things out, but God didn't. He's known from the beginning to the end about all this stuff. But he's not worried about atomic bombs. He's not worried about men walking on the moon. How big a deal do you think it is from God's perspective that somebody walked on the moon? Probably not so big a deal, right? For us, that's amazing. How big do you think the moon is in God's world? I mean, the point is what we think. Our church and our Christianity life is down here. History's up here. It's so much bigger. It's the other way around, I believe. God is in charge of everything. And everything that's occurring, all these nations that have risen and been defeated over time, is really a story of God's plan worked out here on earth to bring. And his plan is really about offering redemption to us. That's what this is all about. So the idea that at one point you could be saved by obeying a bunch of laws, and then there's another time when you do this, and then before the law was given, I'm not sure what you did, what people think you did before Moses, but see, that's not really true. God's redemption plan has always been what it is. It's just a matter of what point in time did you live? Were you looking, or like we are, looking back at it? Or did you live before it and you knew God had to do something and you were looking forward to it, as Abraham was, but maybe you didn't know all the details? Well, you know what? You don't have to know all the details to be saved. Do you have to be real smart to be saved? You just have to believe, right? You just have to accept God. That's always been God's plan. That's always been his plan. It's always been a plan of grace. How did they get the skins to cover themselves in the garden? They sacrificed something, and God's grace was right there in the garden. And it's been throughout eternity. God's grace being imparted to us is what this is all about. Now, it's true at certain times we know more and we know less because things have happened. Like, for instance, Jesus came, died, and was resurrected. We know that now. People that lived hundreds of years before he did that didn't know that. I mean, they hadn't seen it. But the fact that they hadn't seen it didn't make it any less real or more real. Just like today, we talked about this morning. It was interesting. I thought, Charlie, you're going to teach my lesson here this morning when we were talking about this. The fact that we haven't seen Christ come back the second time. Anybody here in here seen Christ come back the second time? Okay, the fact that we haven't seen it and don't know the exact facts about how it's going to happen, does that make it any more or less real that that's going to happen? Zero. We have no influence on that because that's God doing that. And what I want to emphasize to you is just stop and think sometimes. Think about history as a whole. And every time there's something happens, our first question, I believe, should be, now how does this fit in to God's plan? That's the real question, I think, that we should always be asking. So what I did tonight was I gave you guys this little timeline that I found online. And I'm sorry that it's a little fuzzy, so you'll have to hold it real still and maybe extend your arms a little bit and do some things to read it, because there's a lot of information on there. But it's sort of a handy little thing, and if you look at it real close, you'll see that it's really nice because it ties in the various books of the Bible. It ties in a lot of the characters in the Bible, but then it also ties in other things that were going on in the world during this timeline. And so this timeline is really a timeline of what most of us would call the Jewish faith. I'd like to call it, I don't know what the right word would be, maybe the Judeo-Christian faith, because I think our faith, this timeline is a timeline of our faith. This is a timeline of God when he, and it starts really with Abraham, really it starts with Noah, but it is a timeline of God bringing about the redemption, the promise of his son, and the redemption that was promised Adam and Eve in the garden. It was prophesied right after they sinned in the garden. And if some of those times in the Garden of Eden refer to literal days, that was almost 6,000 years ago. Now, when we say numbers like that, sometimes they roll off our tongues and we say, oh, like that's no big deal. Well, 6,000 years is a long time. I mean, how many of us in here ever saw George Washington? You know, that was maybe 250 years ago, something in that range. 250 years. We're talking 6,000 years. So quite a while ago. And for the first almost 2,000 of those years, there was no such thing as a called Jewish, separated Jewish faith. If you look at the timeline there, you'll see that Abraham doesn't come along until about 2165. So for 2,000 years, now 2,000 years, that's as long as it's been since Christ was here. There was no such thing as a separate, called out people like we tend to think of as the beginning of the Jewish faith. But you know what? During that whole 2,000 years, God was not asleep. And his plan was not dormant, waiting for the right person to come along. God was working out all kinds of things in between there. And one of those little events was what we call a flood, that in which God basically destroyed essentially every living thing on earth that wasn't in that ark. But that's all part of God's plan. Even the rainbow that came after it is part of God's plan. So there's this period of time in there when there is no such thing as we know it as the Judeo-Christian faith. And then God calls Abraham. What I want to do here before I go any further with this timeline, I want to read a few scriptures, which I think are real important here, because what we're really talking about, when you boil it all down, I think, is this question of where does God fit into these times in history, and where does he fit in now? And when you say a question like that, really what you're asking is just how sovereign is God? So if I use the word sovereign, if I say Pastor Al is sovereign in this church, what does that mean? Do what? He's the boss. Okay, he's the boss. What does it mean to be sovereign besides being the boss? Sometimes being a boss, you're not sovereign. Trust me, I know that game. Pardon me? Well, hopefully they're humble, but what does it really mean to be sovereign? Pardon me? Friendly? Okay, those are characteristics sometimes of someone that's sovereign. But what does it really mean to be sovereign? Tell me what the word sovereign means. Okay.
Independent.
Now, what? Okay, that's a good word. What does that mean?
They're separate.
Yeah, they're separate. Who is above someone who's sovereign, truly sovereign?
Nobody.
So what does that mean? It's hard. I'll tell you what. If I'm in certain countries of the world, they understand this word sovereign very well. But I'm going to tell you, in America, we have trouble with this word. We like to use things like, well, that's just not right. It's not fair. That is not right. I have rights. We like to use words like that. When you're talking to someone who is truly sovereign, do you get to say to them, no, I have rights? If you're in the middle of a battlefield, I mean, a real battlefield, Do you get to look at the commander and say, no, you're violating my rights. I'm not going to do that. Do you get to do that? Okay. Now think about that in terms of these scriptures that God said about him. God says about himself, or is written about God. So the first one I want to read here, I just messed myself up from the, flipping the page here. Okay, I'm going to read Psalm 103:19. It says, "The Lord hath prepared his throne in the heavens, and his kingdom ruleth over it." And if we want to go a little further in Psalms here, I got some more verses in Psalms. We go to Psalm 115, verse 3. Now think about this. We don't think of God like this very often. But our God is in the heavens. That we think of with God. But then he says, he hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. Let's look at Psalm 135. Verses 5 and 6. "For I know that the Lord is great, and that our Lord is above all gods. Whatsoever the Lord pleased, that did he in heaven and in earth, in the seas and all deep places." So do you really think Attila the Hun shocked God? At some point, was he, oh, wow, I didn't expect that. Okay. One more here. Isaiah 46:10. "Declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times, the things that are not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand and I will do all my pleasure." Now, these are scriptures talking about God and the word to use here would be sovereignty. And the thing about it is God, it tells us in Romans, has revealed his nature to us. It's available, it's out there. You can see it everywhere. If you just take a walk, you can see God everywhere. We always talk about God has created everything. When you just walk through the woods, you just see, if you look close enough, you'll see God everywhere. Because everything that exists out there, he created. Well, but when we start talking about time and historical events and things that have occurred, we then sometimes want to relegate God down to a position of sort of riding along with the tide. But the reality is, I believe, that's not true. God is just as he, everything you see out there in nature, everything that you see that's created, God, it shows us God, so does everything that's occurred in history. The question is why is he doing all this? Well, here's the reason. And the reason is he loves you and I. And what he really desires is to have a relationship with you and I. And he's planned this whole thing out from beginning to end. just so he can touch your life and my life. And all he's asking for is a response back. All this stuff that's occurred is his plan, his way of bringing us, me first and foremost, as the worst, back into a relationship with him. Everything that's occurred has been that way. Now, as we read through the scriptures, as we look at things that have occurred, we start getting in all this minutia and these details, which is fun, and it's good that we do that, and it's good that we study those things. But we have to be careful and not get like sometimes scientists do. I love study science. I've had to do a few science classes in my day. And what we do sometimes is in science, when we try to explain certain events and we can't quite figure out exactly why they occurred, we come up with things. Sometimes we call them theories. Sometimes we call them hypotheses. Anybody in college right now? What's the difference, Trenton? Yeah. And the thing about it is, if we forget the fact, if we don't factor into every one of those things that God is sovereign, and any idea that we come up with that says, well, God really didn't know about that, or he didn't count on that, or he didn't think of that, or in some cases, he doesn't exist because I think this is this way. Well, then, now we've gotten off on a tangent because we've lost one of the fundamental principles of the fact that God created everything. Well, the same thing, if we believe what I just said, the same thing is true when you look at historical events. If you look at them and at some point start reaching conclusions about things and forget the fact that that occurred within God's plan. And he had a reason for that. And the fact that we may not understand that reason doesn't make it any more or less part of God's plan. It just means we don't understand it. And maybe we need to dig a little deeper, or maybe we need to focus on something else. But God has been the conductor of everything that has occurred in history. And what I want to demonstrate here a little bit, I think, is what we consider time and big volumes of time as being real important in God's plan. Time, volumes of time, are not that important. They're not that significant from God's perspective. From our perspective, 6,000 years is a long time. From God's perspective, 6,000 years, probably not so significant, right? Especially if you compare that to something called eternity. That's probably not such a long period of time. But in our perspective, it is long. For instance, if you look at this timeline here and think of it as what we're talking about here, starting with Abraham in 2165, is sort of the calling, the beginning of the Jewish faith. You know, we read the story in Genesis about Abraham being called and God telling him that he would bless the whole earth in his seed. Well, the culmination of that blessing occurs right down here on the third, on the second line over on the right, where you see that cross. So when God's talking to Abraham in 2165, excuse me, and he says, I'll bless you, but I'll also bless in your seed, I'm going to bless the whole earth. God, from God's perspective, now this is 2165 years or so in between. But from God's perspective, he sees this cross over here and the resurrection associated with it. Sort of like, it's October, and maybe somebody in your family, maybe one of your kids or grandkids, has said something to you along these lines. I would like to have, and you fill in the blank, for Christmas. Anybody ever had anybody say anything like that to you here recently? And you look at them and you go, now for a kid from October, what is today, the 22nd? 23rd. From October 23rd to December 25th, how long is that for a kid? That's a long time, isn't it? For most of us in here, is that really that long? And you look at them and you go, okay, or we'll see, or whatever. And you start planning. Most of you all are grandparents or parents, you really start planning, right? Especially for grandkids. By the way, I just held mine about an hour ago. You start planning. And for that kid, waiting on that request seems like an eternity. But for you, who have it in your power to do that, it's not so long, is it? Matter of fact, you get so excited, sometimes you can't even wait till December 25th. You have to do something ahead of time. I don't know if anybody's ever done anything like that. So here God is talking to this guy, Abraham, and he calls him, and he makes a promise to him. And he sees this cross. And in between, if you look on that piece of paper, you're going to see a whole bunch of things that occur here on earth from 2165 to that cross. You're going to see things that we all have memorized stories about. You see Joseph in there. You see the Ten Commandments coming. You see Moses talking to the Israelites at Deuteronomy. You see Samuel, King David, Solomon. You could just keep right on going. You'll see Daniel in here, Daniel in the lion's den. You see Ezra, Nehemiah. Lots of things that occurred to the Israelites, and also things that occurred out here in the world parallel to those things. But the story here is God is up here above all this, and when all this stuff's occurring, just like you at Christmas, and in between times, they're trying to trick you and find out all this stuff and things. There's something out here that God's going to make happen. And in the case of the present, you're going to make happen. And in God's case, there's a cross. and a son that's going to hang on it. So, do you really think any of these Persians or Babylonians or Nebuchadnezzars or anybody in between here? You're really going to change this cross out here? Is it going to stop God? Is it? Let me ask you, that present that you're planning for your grandchild, what's it going to take to stop you from getting it? And me or you, we certainly aren't God. It's going to take a lot, right? In the case of God, he's sovereign. As somebody said, he's the boss. He's a whole lot more than that. What's going to stop him from providing that cross? Certainly not all these historical characters in between. What? They're not going to change God's plan, because history is not driving God's plan. God's plan is driving history. Yes, somebody say something?
No.
Oh, I thought somebody said something. I was hoping somebody was going to say something. But so the story of the Judaism, the Judeo-Christian story, our story, is the story of God's plan being revealed. And these big blocks of time in here are just the method that God chose to reveal this plan and the ultimate end to it. The story of the Ten Commandments being delivered. God gave us the Ten Commandments. Let's talk about that a little bit. Now, the Ten Commandments are very important. How many of you have them memorized? If we say they're important, I know Debbie does. It's a long story in a church we went to a long time ago. The guy embarrassed the whole church one time at a teaching. But the Ten Commandments, we think they're very, are they very important? Okay. Anybody in here, everybody in here got them memorized? What's the sixth one? Okay. I don't want to embarrass anybody. What I want you to do is go read them. If you don't know them, memorize them. But they're very important, right? God gave the Ten Commandments to us. He gave them through Moses to the Israelites, and then they've been passed on down to us, right? So, the way sometimes we think of time, we sometimes think, well, if you were born before, when were the Ten Commandments given on this timeline here? 1446. So if we assume that Adam, even if 4,000's right, so that means, if you do the math here real quick, for about 2,500 years, there were no Ten Commandments written on earth. So does that mean that it was okay to murder somebody prior to the Ten Commandments being given? What did Cain do to Abel? See this revealing, this thing that God has done down through time, like when he gave the Ten Commandments, is really more of a revealing in more detail of who he is and who he has always been. Just like nature out there. You can walk in nature and you can see God everywhere. God has revealed himself through nature. The book of Romans teaches us that. And he's revealed himself through time, through historic events, through things that he did. He not only gave the Ten Commandments, but he gave the whole of the law. And he revealed himself. But the point is, it doesn't just start at that point that those things contained in that law began on that day. And prior to that, they didn't exist. Because God has always been God. And he always will be God. And he has revealed himself down through time. We studied this morning in our Sunday school class that even at the time of Jesus' arrest, when he was taken captive, there were things about his crucifixion and his resurrection that God had not fully revealed, even to his disciples at that time. Now, later on, we read in the Gospels that are written after his resurrection, we read in there that they tell you in the Gospels, they will say things like, "We remembered what he said back then. We know what he meant. We know what happened. We know why he did certain things." But at the time, they didn't know. So this whole story of the Judeo-Christian story and history itself, historical events, are really about God revealing himself. And the purpose of his revealing is really contained, real symbolically, in that cross. That was his plan. That was his plan from the beginning, from the time that man sinned, prior to man sinning. The scripture says that it was ordained from the foundation of the earth. God knew he would have to do that. And he's revealed his plan through that whole process. That story is really the true story of Judaism and Christianity. It's our story. And you know, today, that story's continuing on. It's just moving forward. And that is really the story of God's plan. Now, there's another side to Judaism that we have to remember is, and we're going to find out next week, or in the next couple weeks, that there's another story, another side to Christianity. And here's the side that we need to talk here a little bit about. And this is where we get these things mixed up. What we've been talking about tonight up to this point is really what God's plan is and what he intended when he called Abraham, then when he called Moses, right on down the line, David, all of them. That's God's plan. And you know what? God's plan will happen. But along the way, we as human beings, we sometimes try to interfere in God's plan. And sometimes we get off track. And you know what? That doesn't surprise God either. He knows that's going to happen. But we do it anyway. And the Jewish people did the same thing. They started out following after the call of Abraham, following God. Abraham worshiped God. He sacrificed to God. But then, as time went on, especially when they got into Egypt and they got called out of Egypt through Moses and the law was given, they started developing things outside of God's plan. They started developing their own set of rules and regulations. And in their case, they called these things the oral traditions and things like that. They wrote all kinds of rules and laws separate from God's true word. And they got to a point where they had things upside down. And they started following all these rules and regulations instead of God's word. To the point that when Jesus shows up on the scene almost 2,000 years later, he said things to the Jewish leaders at that time. What were some of the things that he said to them? Anybody can tell me some of the names he called some of the Jewish leaders? What words did he use to describe them? Vipers. White. Yeah. They didn't even know what he was talking about. They had gotten so far away from the real intent of what the Jewish faith, the Judeo faith, the faith of Abraham, and what was passed on through Moses in the law, they'd gotten so far away from that that it was like Moses' law didn't even exist. They had a commandment that said, "Thou shalt not murder." When they were faced with a leader that they couldn't understand, what did they do to Jesus? They plotted to kill him because they said, "Oh, he's going to get us in trouble with the Romans." So, were they more afraid of the Romans or God? They were more afraid of the Romans, right? What happens in this story is Jesus comes along, and we know what happens. They do. They crucify him. And then he's resurrected. That's all part of God's plan. It's just a continuation of what God planned way back here. It wasn't a surprise. Maybe a surprise to them, but it wasn't a surprise to God. It's a continuation of his plan. And a new time begins. And the thing is for the first about 100 years, for the up until 100 AD, about 70 years after Christ was here, most people thought of what we today call Christianity, they thought of it as just another part of the Jewish faith. Even though lots of Gentiles were saved and were brought into it, they thought of it as an extension of the Jewish faith and a fulfillment of all these. People got into scriptures and they figured out all these prophecies that had been fulfilled. And a lot of the early church were Jewish people that were converted. We know almost all the disciples until Paul came along. They were Jewish. And people started seeing, hey, wait a minute. All this has been wrong here in the past. We even read in the book of Acts that they had to have a council there in Jerusalem when the Gentiles started getting saved, because there was all these debates about which of the Jewish laws they had to obey and which they didn't, which they shouldn't obey. So they didn't go off and start a new church. They came and met with the leaders of the Christian faith, of the new part, the new faith. They were all Jewish. Peter, James, and John, all those guys. And so for the first sort of 70 or so years, up to about 100 AD, most of these people and the church was thought of just as an extension of the true Jewish faith. And people would look in the old scriptures and they could see what was happening. And they understood this. Let me read a couple of things here about these early Christians, just to give you a flavor for the way they were thought of. Some of this might be a little long, but I think it's pretty good. I want you to get a flavor for what was really happening then. This first is a famous letter that one of the governors in an area that Paul had evangelized wrote. This is actually around 111 AD. Anybody ever hear of Pliny? Know who that is? He was a historian, but he was also a governor, like Pontius Pilate was a governor, only he was a governor in Bithynia. I can't hardly say that. Pontus and Bithynia. And the emperor in Rome was Trajan. Anybody ever hear of Trajan? Anyway, it's not important. So he writes him a letter, and he's describing these people called Christians. And bear in mind, they think of them not as some separate group like we think, like today. They think of them as part of the Jewish faith. They're just these people that are causing trouble to them is what they think. Because the Romans believed in emperor worship. And they insisted that everybody worship the emperor as a god. So he starts off, what's happened is some people have been accused of being Christians, which to them means they're not worshiping the emperor. It's like everything else, they turn them in. So he writes to Trajan and he says, "It is my practice, my lord, to refer to you all matters concerning which I am in doubt." And then he goes on to tell him, you know, he says, like you would do to your boss, "For who can give better guidance to my hesitation or inform my ignorance?" In other words, he's saying, "Hey, boss, you're a lot smarter than me." And then he says, "I have never participated in trials of Christians. I therefore do not know what offenses it is the practice to punish or investigate and to what extent." And he says, "And I have not been a little hesitant as to whether there should be any distinction on account of age or no difference between the very young and the more mature, whether pardon is to be granted for repentance, or if a man has once been a Christian, it does him no good to have ceased to be one, or whether the name itself, even without offenses, or only the offenses associated with the name, are to be punished." So here this governor is saying, what in the world do I do with all these people that are accused of this? So he's asking. So here's what he says he's been doing. He says, "Meanwhile, in the case of those who were denounced to me as Christians," he says, "here's what I've done so far. I have observed the following procedure. I interrogated these as to whether they were Christians. Those who confessed, I interrogated a second and a third time, threatening them with punishment. Those who persisted, I ordered executed. For I had no doubt that whatever the nature of their creed, stubbornness and inflexible obstinacy surely deserved to be punished. There were others possessed of the same folly, but because they were Roman citizens, I signed an order for them to be transferred to Rome. If you remember, that's what happened with Paul about 50 years prior to this. And then here's the funny thing that happens is, soon accusations spread, as usually happened, because of the proceedings going on, and several incidents occurred. And here was one of the famous things. There was an anonymous document published. Today we would call that Facebook. And we'd think that's a good thing. Containing the names of many persons, those who denied that they were or had been Christians, when they invoked the gods in words dictated by me, offered prayer with incense and wine to your image, Trajan, which I had ordered to be brought for this purpose, together with statues of the gods, and moreover curse Christ, none of which those who are really Christians, it is said, can be forced to do. These, I thought, should be discharged. Others named by the informer declared that they were Christians, but then denied it, asserting that they had been, but had ceased to be, some 3 years before, others many years. They all worshipped your image and the statutes of the gods and cursed Christ. And then he goes on to say that, I'm not going to read the rest of this, but he goes on to say that as long as they renounce Christ, I punish them and I let them go. If they don't renounce Christ, I execute them. And so here you have this pagan governor thinking of these Christians. They're just a nuisance to him. But what's happening is they're changing the whole world around him, and they don't know what to do. And what Trajan writes back to Pliny and says, he said, you're doing the right thing. And he says that we as a civilized nation should never punish anybody without proof. We hear that all the time today. Without any regard to what you're really talking about, it's just like, you follow the laws, and I don't really care what you do, as long as you procedurally do things right, you're okay. You're okay. But here, what's happening is this: these pagans, they don't have any idea what to do with these Christians. And they were turning their world upside down. Let me read you something else here. So in this first 100 years, here's a little write-up that you can find. You can find lots of these online if you want to, but I like some of the things in this. These early Christians, these first 100, I'll say the first century of Christianity, they were marked by things a lot different than what we talk about. And what we're going to talk about next week when we talk about the beginning of the church, the organized church itself. Remember, who I'm talking about here are people who have just been saved, and they're just going about living their lives. And most people think of them as part, they're just Jewish people who are living differently. But here's what people would write about him. There were three distinguishing marks of the early church. Now, I'm going to put you guys to the test here. See, I've got the answer up here, so that's why I like to do this. There's three distinguishing marks of the early church. Now, we're all church people in here, most of us. What do you think were the three distinguishing marks of the early church during, say, its first 100 years? Give me a guess. Do what? The symbol of the fish? Yeah. That's not, I'm talking about the way they lived, or the things that made them separate. How would somebody look at somebody's life and say, oh, they're probably a Christian.
Worshiping the one true God.
They worship the one true God. Okay, that's... Let me read the first one, and then you all see if you can come up with the next two. Number one is they lived a completely separate... The way they lived was completely separate from the world around them, no matter where they lived. Their lives were so different from everyone they lived around that they did you get that right? Don't cheat. That they were completely separate. People would instantly look at them and know something's different. That's number one. Pardon me? Their witness. That's very close. Somebody said? Number two is they had absolute unconditional love for each other. Unconditional. It really didn't matter how they looked, how they dressed, how they talked. They had unconditional love for each other and actually everybody around them, even though weren't Christians. Number three, and you're pretty close here, Judy. I'll read this. Number three, they had almost a childlike obedience to the teachings of Jesus. They never lived in the gray area. They lived the teachings that they heard in the Gospels and heard from the apostolic fathers. They followed them without question. Those are the three things. Here's a description that an unknown author wrote about them in the year 130. He wrote this to the Romans, some of the Roman leaders. Here's the way he described the Christians. It says, they dwell in their own countries simply as sojourners. They are in the flesh, but they do not live after the flesh. They pass their days on earth, but they are citizens of heaven. They obey the prescribed laws, and at the same time, they surpass the laws by their lives. They love all men, but are persecuted by all. They are unknown and condemned. They are put to death, but will be restored to life. They are poor, yet they make many rich. They possess few things, yet they abound in all. They are dishonored, but in their very dishonor are glorified. And those who hate them are unable to give any reason for their hatred. See, the early Christian faith was all about following Christ and living out Christ. It wasn't about theology and all those things, which I like to read about, but it was of no concern to them. They had a relationship with Christ, and they followed him in strict obedience. I got one more I'd like to read, and then we'll... This is a little later, in about the 200s. And we'll talk about this guy next week a little bit, but there's a priest. His name's Tertullian. Anybody ever hear of Tertullian? He's probably one of the early theologians, wrote volumes and volumes of stuff. But he said that the Romans would always be amazed when they saw the Christians, and they would always say these words, "See how they love one another." And it was amazing to them, the love that these Christians showed. And finally, this was written about the early Christians. I think this is the last thing. No, wait a minute, I got one other thing. A person who does not do, now listen, not believe, but a person who does not do what God has commanded shows he really does not believe God. This was Clement who said this. To the early Christians, to claim to trust God while refusing to obey him was a contradiction. Their Christianity was more than verbal. As one early Christian expressed it, "We don't speak great things, we live them." That was the early Christian faith. The early Christian faith was almost a fulfillment of what God had promised Abraham almost 2,000 years ago, before that, that he would bring about a blessing to all nations on earth. That's what the early Christian faith was. Now, we're going to find next week, I think I'm probably way over time here, not too bad. We're going to find next week, like we talked about how Judaism started developing all these extra ideas and maybe got off track. Well, what we're going to find next week is, in some ways, the story of the Christian church is a parallel to what happened in Judaism. And that's what I mean by the people that lived at the time of Abraham, they breathed, they got up in the morning, they ate breakfast. They probably didn't go to McDonald's and eat it. But they needed one thing. They needed to be saved. They needed God to restore them to fellowship, just like Adam and Eve needed God to restore them to fellowship 2,000 years prior to that. And the people that lived at the time of Christ and were the first Christians, they needed the same thing. They needed restored, and Christ brought the finished work of God so that, and many were restored. And you know what? It's 2,000 years later, and that's what we need today. We don't need anything else. We need to, the story hasn't changed. It hasn't changed from when Adam and Eve sinned. It hasn't changed at Abraham's time. It didn't change the events. There have been lots of events that have occurred, but the story's the same. We need God. People need God. And they need God to change their lives. And so that's, to me, that's probably a different take on any, and I'd probably fail every college history class that I would take. I managed to get through a few of them, Trenton. I had to bite my tongue a lot of times. But history is really about God's plan. God isn't just going along for the ride. He is the plan. And his plan is real simple. It's very simple. He's got a plan, and he wants to change hearts and lives and bring them into fellowship with him. And that hasn't changed from the time of Moses to the time of Jesus to the time of Abraham. It hasn't changed. God's revealed himself in a lot of ways during all those years, but he hasn't changed. And he's the same today. If they haven't accepted Jesus, in my opinion, they are not saved. Now, how God will judge them, how God will judge them, I think I said this morning, if I knew the answer to that, like I knew the answer to the question about Judas, then you'd probably call me God. You'd call me sovereign. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know that it was faith that made Abraham righteous. It was faith that made Moses righteous. It was faith that made Noah righteous. That's what the scriptures tells us in the 11th chapter. It wasn't that Moses did sacrifices correctly. It was faith. And it hasn't changed. And it's still the same. We happen to know a lot more now than they did way back then. But the process is still the same. These people back here look forward to God bringing their salvation. We look backward. But still God has changed their life. We look forward to the coming of Christ. And it'll happen out here. One of these days, depending on how you think the events occur, Christ will come back. And there'll be people that'll be looking back at Christ's coming. So are they going to be smarter than us? Because they know that Christ... Is that going to make us less saved because he hasn't come back yet and we don't know all the details? What saves us is not knowing all these events, but knowing God and trusting him. And living as those early Christians did today, obeying God, following God, a childlike faith in his teachings. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No.
That's right, because what you're saying when you say all, when you think like that, you're thinking, you're sort of saying, well, okay, from a time of Moses, once all these sacrifices were put in place, that as long as somebody did everything exactly according to those sacrifices, they were saved. Paul said, I was a Jew of the Jew. I was the best. And he said, I count it all loss because it did nothing for me. See, he recognized that the fact that he knew all that stuff and even did it, that's not what saves you. God saves you. Abraham, the law didn't exist until 700 years after Abraham was born. So how did he, was Abraham saved? How did he get saved? See, Abraham got saved the same way we do today. He believed God. He may not have known everything that we know today, but he had faith in God, and he put his trust in God. Now, God may not have revealed his whole plan to him personally at that time or anybody around him, but he put his faith and trust in God. And that's how we get saved ultimately. And the idea that now we're saved by grace, but back then they were saved by following the law. Nobody's ever been saved by following the law. You know why? Because nobody can follow the law. Nobody's that good. You can't be saved that way. It takes God redeeming us. That's the story of the Christian faith. And that's where it got started. And the early Christians, in general, were right on top of this. Question we have to ask ourselves, are we on top of that? I fail that test a lot. Anybody have anything you want to add to this? Other than say mercy and let me out of here? Yeah, yeah, we're going to talk about the church and how the church sort of formed the church as an organized church, the canon of the Bible. And we still haven't got to the Muslims. We still haven't got there. That ought to tell us something. We still haven't got there. Yeah, we got about 500 years of time. We also haven't got to the Jehovah's Witness or the Mormons or others.